Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
And hello, very good evening to you. It's John Dixon here with the Astronomy Show, right here in 103.2 Dublin City FM. And of course we bring you all the latest news from all the discoveries from all corners of the universe. And Ben on a mission this evening, so it's just me to look after you for the next half hour or so. Now you can also catch us live on the internet on dublincityfm.ie or astronomy.ie or even as a podcast. And a special welcome to those of you joining us on astronomy.fm across the Atlantic on the other side. So great to have you along as well. We welcome any queries, comments or questions that you may have of an astronomical nature, of course. And the email address, astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. Or you can text or WhatsApp on 087-179-1032. And just before we go into where the planets are, the International Space Station, it came across our skies here in Dublin at 7:52, so we've just missed it. It was only in the skies for 3 minutes. Now, unfortunately, it's not back in our evening skies until November the 18th, until December the 7th. I couldn't figure that out for a minute, because I was watching for the tomorrow's time, and it just didn't appear up, so I did forget that we have it in our skies for about a fortnight or so. And it was in since September the 15th until this evening. And you might have seen, because it's quite clear outside, you might have seen over Dublin or anywhere else around the world at the International Space Station flying across our skies. It looks like an aeroplane without the flashing lights, and it certainly goes quite quickly as well. So it was only a shortish pass tonight, unfortunately. 3 minutes or so we've just missed that, and not back in our skies until November the 18th, so look forward to that one as well. Now then, the planets. Mercury, unfortunately, very low in the east at dawn, as it is the other side and way out of the sight of ourselves, so not very good to watch. Venus, it's brilliant at the moment. It's minus 4.8 in dim Cancer. It's getting ever higher in the east before and during dawn. And I'd be guilty of going up and watching this creeping into our skies at night as well. So this week it's at its peak brightness as the morning star in a telescope. It's a thickening crescent and extremely bright and well worth looking for. Again, it's in the east and just rising just and during dawn. Now, Mars, unfortunately, out of sight behind the glare of the sun, and will remain so for the rest of the year, so we don't get a chance to see Mars until next year. We'll give you more details about that later. Jupiter, on the other hand, magnitude minus 2.7. It rises in the east-northeast. Not long after dark, so you will get to see that round about now, in fact, and watch it under one of the brightest stars of Aries. Jupiter dominates the eastern sky by late evening and shines highest in the south in the early hours of the morning, so you get a good chance to see Jupiter. Saturn, on the other hand, it's a plus 0.5. It's dim in Aquarius. Now, last week, it wasn't that far away from the moon, and it's still quite a sight to see as well, although rather dim, and it's low in the southeast in twilight, so it's 2 weeks past its opposition at this stage, and Saturn shines a good height before a telescope observing by 9 or 10 p.m. So if you want to go out later on, you'll do that. It looks like it could be quite clear this evening. Uranus, 5.7 in the brightness scale, nice and high in the early morning hours, 7 degrees or 8 degrees east of Jupiter. I'm going to think about that one. Yep. Very, very difficult to see. And the last one, Neptune, magnitude 7.8 at the Aquarius-Pisces border. And it's fairly high in the southeast by 10 p.m. So if you are and have a good telescope or a great pair of binoculars, you get a good chance to see those two elusive planets, Uranus and Neptune. And just going back to Mercury for a second, it's very, very low in the east at dawn, so it's not brilliant. And it will be getting a little bit brighter And you will get to see it around the 23rd at its brightest of October. So look forward to that if you're a Mercury hunter as well. Now, tomorrow's sunrise. That's 7:31 a.m. and setting at 18:55. We're losing 4 minutes and 10 seconds per day at the moment, and it will ease down and calm down a little bit, but still in by the end of the month, it'll be still just around the 4 minutes per day, and it's still recognisable as getting dark, darker early, should I say, and it's, you either like it or you don't. It's not great for cutting grass and things like that, so let's see. Now, the moon rise tomorrow, it will rise at 14:30. Now, you won't get to see that very well, but it does rise at 20:56, which is just a couple of minutes before 9 o'clock tomorrow evening, and setting on the 5th, which is Thursday, at 15:37. So you will get to see it as a morning bluey sky, and it's quite interesting to see it as well. So that's it, and it's at the moment it's at an 81% waning gibbous, and in if you're interested, it's 385,524 kilometres from our little planet here as well. Now, we've got some meteor showers to look forward to. And starting on the 8th and 9th, the peak on the 8th and the 9th, we have the Draconid meteor shower. I'll go into them in just a moment. And on the 21st and 22nd of October, we have the Orionids. And I'll give you more details now in 2 seconds. So, all we need to know, the Draconid shower is a real oddity. Its radiant point stands highest in the sky as darkness falls, and that's why you'll see more Draconids in the evening hours than the mornings after midnight. And midnight is sort of the land, the timing for watching meteors as well, and I'm a great fan of clear skies, and we got some good views of the Perseids this year. So we have the peak on October the 9th, and the best time to watch the Draconids is in the evening of the October the 8th, which is just a few days away, through the wee hours of the morning until October the 9th, with the waning crescent moon 23% illuminated, so you will get a good chance to see some of those meteors as well. It does start about a month before that, so it has been in our skies for the moment as we're going through the tail of the unit of it's all the dust and particles, so peaking 8th and 9th, so just remember that. So we're 5 days away, but you will get to see an odd one or two as well. So the Draconis meteor shower's parent comet, the object for the dust that we see burning up in the atmosphere, is a periodic comet called 21P Giacobone Zinner. A lot of people would know about this particular one. So, Michel Giacobone discovered the comet on December the 20th in 1900, and he saw it in the evening sky from the Nice Observatory in France, and it was faint in the southern part of the constellation Aquarius at the time, and he was using an 18-inch diameter lens on his telescope as well. So, that was how it all started. And just to give you a bit more information about that, the debris from the comet is not scattered uniformly around its orbit, so they can come really from anywhere at all. So that's a date for your diaries, the 8th and 9th. And we have the Orionids. These are quite nice as well. The period is from the 2nd of October to 7th of November, so we have a good chance to see some of those as well. And the peak in Dublin here is the 21st to the 22nd of October in Dublin. And if you're lucky, you'll get to see up to 20 meteors per hour, and its parent comet was Halley's Comet, of course, and they're active every year in October, and usually peaking again on the 20th to the 21st. And we can luckily get to see 20 per hour. So looking forward to those two coming up at beginning in the middle of the month and the end of the month as well. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that next week as the days get a bit closer towards the end of the month as well. So now, supernova in James Webb telescope image could help solve one of the universe's biggest mysteries. And believe it or not, the James Webb telescope, not up there that long, has spotted a distant supernova that appears three times in the same photograph. Now, how does this work? So, the three bright spots in the arc around G165 make it seem like there are three separate light sources being visually manipulated or lensed, and it's seemingly going to help us to measure supernovas and all that sort of things, and one of these days we might find out the universe's biggest mysteries with the James Webb Telescope. So looking forward to getting a little bit more information about that. Now then, we had last Thursday, we had an attempt for a record skydive in formation, which was on Thursday last, and this is AX1's Larry Connor and his colleagues. And they did do it. Yep, they set a new formation skydiving world record on Thursday morning, September the 28th. Now, Larry Connor was one of the crew members in April the 2022's AX1 mission. This was the first private astronaut mission to the International Space Station, and plans to set a new mark for the highest HALO. That's the high altitude, low open formation skydive as well. And Larry is 73 years old. So that was good fun. And they did set off and do their little jump. Now, they ascended in a balloon up to 35,000 feet and then decided to jump over and parachute down. So everything all went well there. So it's good. Strange sounds have been recorded high in the Earth's atmosphere, and they have scientists baffled just at the moment. It's a solar-powered balloon mission detecting a repeating infrasound noise into the stratosphere. Scientists have no idea at all what's making it, and they've detected sounds as high in the Earth's atmosphere, and they just cannot be identified. So, the solar-powered balloon mission launched from Sandia National Laboratories carried a microphone to a region of Earth's atmosphere 30 miles or 50 kilometres above the surface called the stratosphere, and they're still trying to work this out. They have no idea what these particular sounds are. So aliens, I don't think they are. I don't think they think they're aliens, but there were frequencies around the 20 hertz, so that's quite low. It's like the drum rolling end of the spectrum. So there we go. So that's it. Now, what is a supermoon? This is really weird. I did a little bit of research on this. And a supermoon is actually a full moon or a new moon that nearly coincides with perigee, which is the closest that the moon gets to Earth and in the elliptical orbit as well. So it doesn't happen that often, as it swings by each month. And its technical name is the perigee syzygy of the Earth-Moon-Sun system. And the real association of the moon with both oceanic and crustal tides has led to claims that the supermoon phenomenon may be associated with increased risks of events like earthquakes and volcanic eruptions as well. So strangely enough, the supermoon has been appearing for millions of years at this stage, and it was discovered or put into our minds, I suppose, by an astrologer not so long ago, and he invented this, as we call it, an invention of the supermoon. And what you would really do when the sun is, I suppose, as closest or as furthest away, if you were to put a 1 euro coin on top of a 2 euro coin, that is the difference, roughly about 10 to 12% of a difference. So that's why it appears a little bit closer to us at particular times. So we don't have another one until September, I think, of next year. So the actual figure is about 14% larger in diameter than apogee, and many observers insist that the moon looks bigger to them, although it isn't. It's the same size, it's just a little bit close. And again, it was discovered by an astrologer, not an astronomer, not so long ago. And I'm not quite sure exactly what so long ago it was, but it's just an invention. So it's something that the news and the media has picked up, is and it's quite good fun to watch as well. It doesn't, it's a bit of fun, so it's great to watch as well. So the name of the guy who coined this particular supermoon was Richard Nolle in 1979. There we go. And he described both a new and a full moon occurring at or near within 10% of perigee. However, supermoon came to denote the more restricting meaning of a full moon at perigee. So he claimed that, of course, the supermoon would cause an increase in severe weather and earthquakes, but no such connection has been found to this whatsoever. So there we go, supermoon. Yep, it's in our minds now forever. Now, I was looking up, in fact, I had a couple of things I wanted to go through. What if the Earth was to stop spinning? Now, there's the thing for you. I'm sure, as we all know, the Earth spins on its axis every 24 hours. Well, 23 hours and 56 minutes to be exact. But do you know how long it's going to, and has been spinning like this? It's been every day since it was born, 4.5 billion years ago. So the Earth was made of debris left over the sun, which was formed from a huge cloud of matter. And the debris that became the Earth circled and swirled around the sun, just like the water swirls around the plug hole when you empty the sink, and the Earth was fully formed. So there's a lot more to get into that as well. So what would happen? Not really an awful lot. You get long nights, long days. On the dark side, you will get the warm temperatures going around the back to the cold. And it would be incredible to imagine, really, because what helps us spin and slow down, in fact, we are slowing down a little bit, and that's due to the moon doing this as well. And this creates bulges in the Earth's figure, I suppose, around the equators. And it's pushing against the Earth's spin and slowing it down. This means that Earth's day lengthens by 1 second every 50,000 years. Which is not really an awful lot when you think about it in the study of time and all that. So now, just creeping over before we do, you're listening to The Astronomy Show on 103.2 Dublin City FM. John Dixon here. Great to have you along. Here until 8.30, which is another 15 minutes or so. And the text line, as always, 087-179-1032. And you can catch us on text or on WhatsApp on that particular one as well. So I did a little bit of research on some books, and I'm a great fan of searching for different types of books. And I found this list of 40 best space astronomy books. And the first one that came up to my mind was the Backyard Astronomer's Guide. I'm familiar with this particular one. And it's the fourth edition of the Backyard Astronomer's Guide, published first in 1991. And the 2021 edition boasts 48 additional pages from the Big Bang to up-to-date chapters. And it's brilliant. It has some stunning images in every one of them to take your breath away and get you to motivate and get outside as well. So it explains everything from aperture, power, optical design to mounts and filters, each illustrated with some handy photographs. So that's a good one to watch. Here's one for you as well. The Secret World of Stargazing. And you can find solace in the stars with this particular one. This is from Adrian West. He has produced this charming book with a strong emphasis on well-being, how and why stargazing is good for us physically and mentally as well. And The Secret World of Stargazing is a lovely book, as described by the critics. It's a personal, delicate, and beautifully innocent for those of you experienced astronomers and those just getting into it as well. And it is a reminder of why so many of us immerse ourselves in the hobby, so that's good as well. This one I have myself, Moon Gazing, where you get to cover a broad range of nitty-gritty lunar facts, ranging from the phases of to the Apollo missions, and a practical section on lunar photography. Now, this is one thing I've tried to get into is photography, but just haven't got around to it yet. I can't understand this stacking business and all that sort of stuff. But it describes how to do it using smartphones and DSLR cameras. And the most exciting and informative segment is the introduction to the Lunar Atlas. Now, this is brilliant if you can get your way around the moon, where all the Apollo landers from 11 to 17, except 13, of course. And there are all sorts of other ones as well. The Ultimate Guide to Viewing the Cosmos by a chap called David Dickinson. And this one is to brave the minefield of choosing the right telescope, the right aperture, and the right mount, and the right eyepiece. And they show us how to build a basic Newtonian refracting scope for under $50. Now, I think that's a little bit beyond me. And this particular one that caught my attention was The Disordered Cosmos, Shanda Prescott-Weinstein, and it's A Journey into Dark Matter, Space-Time, and Dreams Deferred. Now, I'd be definitely interested in that. It's called The Disordered Cosmos. I think Ben would be into that as well. So there's just a few that we can get for this particular week. I have a few for next week as well, which I look forward to sharing with you as well. Now, two Russians, Americans, have landed back after the ISS mission. And this is two Russian cosmonauts and an American astronaut landed back on Earth on Wednesday after spending a year in the International Space Station. So we had Sergei Propukhev and Dmitry Petelin and Francisco Rubio. Now, we mentioned Rubio. He spent a whole year on board the ISS and landed near the city of Shegishkan in Kazakhstan. And it is said that the Soyuz MS-23 spacecraft carried them and reached Earth at 11:17 GMT. That's our time here. Landing that took place in a normal mode. So glad to see that those are back after all their experiments as well. Seemingly, there is a satellite called the Blue Walker 3 satellite, and it's officially one of the brightest objects in the sky. And on Monday, yesterday, scientists with the International Astronomical Union announced that one of the biggest and brightest objects visible in the night sky is not a star or a planet, but rather the Blue Walker 3 prototype satellite. And to critics, it's unacceptably bright for many sky observers around the world. This is according to Meredith Rawls. She's the co-author of a paper on finding the member of the IAU Center for the Protection of the Dark and Quiet Sky from Satellite Constellation Interference. So it's a big satellite. You know, it's probably the size of a bus. Then it has wings and solar panels and all that as well. So the array itself takes up about 64 square meters or 689 square feet of space. And because those reflectors, the panels are reflective, it's almost like Blue Walker 3 is a giant mirror continuously bouncing sunlight towards our eyes. Now, I don't know exactly where to find this particular satellite. I must look it up and see if we can make a spot the satellite, spot the Blue Walker 3 satellite. There's our mission for the next week as well. And a picture here with about 60 people standing around the solar arrays on this, so it is a big beast. And it will outshine a lot of the stars up there as well. Now, a US TV provider given first ever space debris fine. So the US authorities have issued a breakthrough first ever fine over space debris. And they said that just yesterday, slapping a $150,000 penalty on a TV company that failed properly to dispose of a satellite. So I don't have an awful lot more information on this. And this is a geostationary satellite that came to its end of its operational life and had moved it into the altitude lower than the two parties had agreed on. So there was a bit of a hoo-ha there, and it could cause positive pose orbital debris concerns as well. So, again, I don't have too much information on that because we haven't been given very much, but there's been quite a big fine and the first of that as well. So, unfortunately, that's what's going on in the world at the moment. Now, NASA is extending its New Horizons mission through the late 2020s. The agency has decided that it was best to extend operations for New Horizons until the spacecraft exits the Kuiper Belt, which is expected in 2028 through 2029. And NASA's New Horizons base will be able to keep exploring its exotic environs for at least another 5 years, which is great news. They just announced this last Friday that it will keep the New Horizons lights on while it's zooming through the Kuiper Belt. And so this is the expansive ring of icy bodies beyond Neptune's orbit. I just want to have a quick peep to see if we have any texts in just at the moment. No, not just yet. I can't see any. So we'll see how it goes in the next few minutes before we disappear off. Now, Virgin Galactic has delayed its next flight by one day to October the 6th. And Virgin Galactic has delayed its space tourism mission by one day to Friday, the October the 6th. And the slip will give our team additional day to complete vehicle prep and checks, which are vitally important to launching. So we look forward to taking to the skies in a few days. And the upcoming mission is called Galactic 4. We'll send 3 paying customers to suborbital space and back on Virgin Galactic's VSS utility space plane. Unity will lift off beneath the wings of its carrier plane, VMS Eve, from New Mexico's spaceport in America. So it's getting very exciting in that sort of things. Now, here's something interesting from Spain. They have new CubeSats. They will fly in space, which are going to look like a flock of geese, seemingly. How this works, I'm not quite sure. So Europe's next launch will send the trio of CubeSats to Earth's orbit, and that mimics flying birds in formation. They've given us a drawing of what they would look like, and admittedly now they do. They look like they're flying in formation as well. So they're launching from the Ariane Space Vega C rocket from Europe's Guiana Space Center on October the 4th, which is tomorrow, and the CubeSats will operate about 500 kilometers above Earth, maintaining the optimum distance of 10 k's apart from each other. Noticeably, however, the spacecraft will not have onboard propulsion systems to keep them in formation, so they will probably slip away or get closer or whatever, so we'll just keep an eye on that too as well. There's been a lot of talk about lightning on Venus over the last number of weeks, and it might not be lightning at all. This is what this Parker Solar Probe has found while zipping through space on its 7-year-long mission. And this is to investigate the sun, of course, and I watched this with Ben years ago. And NASA's Parker Solar Probe may have finally picked up the signals of the culprit behind Venus's mysterious lightning storms. And the find happened in 2021. We're only getting to see this now, when Parker made a routine flyby of the Windy World in an effort to harness the planet's gravitational pull and propel itself closer to its primary stellar subjects. Now, just one quick last look at the text line. No, text line is still, that view have just appeared on its own, and text line is still working, which is good. And Alan has said that he likens the moon's pull of that of a rotor blade on a helicopter, helping to stabilize like a gyro as well. And it's good to have you along as always, Alan. I had a question for you earlier on, and I omitted to do it, so it's a bit of research for next week, so I'll give you a shout next week on that one, okay? Anyway, that's all about time we have for this evening. And that email address for comments and questions is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. My thanks to me, of course, for all the bits and pieces, the latest news and driving the sound desk as well. Ben will be back with us next week. He's on what we call a mission. And these are top secret, of course, so we have to keep them quiet. Thanks as ever to James Sweeney for making the show available as a podcast, and indeed to Conor Lennon for making it available on www.astronomy.ie. That's all from me, John Dixon, from this particular edition of the Astronomy Show right here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. And for your entertainment later on, coming up next is Hello China at 9 p.m. Threads with Bren Linnett. Now, I'm lucky enough to see I get to listen to Bren as well. I don't get to listen to Nigel Wood, but that's well worth a listening as well, when he plays all sorts of music from around the universe, the world here as we live in. Midnight After Hours with Dave Barry, jazz, blues and soul until 2 a.m. And don't forget to join myself and Ben same time next week, when we'll be back with the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thanks for listening. And say good night, John. So good night, John. See you next week. Bye bye. And all that is now, and all that is gone, and all that's to come.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.